Can I come to Hayley, and then come to Emma? Then I'm going to come to, I think it's Mark Saxton. Yeah, Saxon. Right. Hayley.
I think it might be my computer that's making that noise. So apologies if it is. So yeah, obviously the point that I put in the chat is that we've been able to do that because, as somebody else mentioned, you know, being one of the last insurers to enter the market, but everything comes at a cost. And what I'm trying to educate people on all of the time is that, you know, by the market still selling life cover predominantly based on price, when there's pennies and pounds difference, and you can have a product that will guarantee that doesn't have that 12-month clause in it, you know, surely that's got to be better for consumer outcomes. That's the important thing from our perspective. And really, you know, the sunset clause, I know that a lot of insurers have tried to move away from that. Some have done that successfully. I think others just need to follow suit. So, you know, from a Guardian perspective, we're doing it because it's the right customer. It's providing the right customer outcome and making sure that we can support people as and when they need it the most. So, yeah.
Well, obviously, I would entirely endorse moving away from comparing life insurance based on price. More importantly, that's what the FCA have said for over the last 15 months. The systems are out there. Anyone wants a demo of Protection Guru Pro, just drop me a line. And we will be publishing some data any day now that shows quite how much of a difference it makes when advisors start putting quality first. The business distribution across the industry is dramatically different as to who gets recommended. Going to come to Emma, back to Emma Thompson, please.
Yeah, so my comment was also going to be around price. So we've got to remember that, you know, whilst lots of you might, you know, on the call might think insurers have got nice big fancy offices and massive profits, they really don't. And when it comes to life insurance, when so much is just based on price, there is a reason why Guardian is not the cheapest, you know, because they have gone down this quality route. And there's lots of advisors that recognise that and are advising accordingly by actually celebrating the improvement on the term illness. But if you're wanting everybody else to follow suit, we've also got to get away from just focusing on life insurance being cheap, 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 because insurers have got to have some profit in there to be able to actually invest and enhance the products to be able to improve the outcomes for claimants. So, you know, we've just got to be realistic here as well. For me, I would much prefer all protection policies to go up in price so that we can get the products, the service, the claim experience, all of that, that both advisors and customers deserve. But at the end of the day, there are lots of advisors that just sell on selling the cheapest, cheapest, cheapest. And that's why insurers then try and be the cheapest, 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 which means that then the things that we want get cut and don't get invested in, whether that's technology or people or whatever it is. So we've also got to be just really careful how we behave as to what outcomes we're actually going to get because of how the industry behaves. So I think that might not be a very popular opinion about some people, but I think it's a fair one to make.
It's a very fair one to make, Emma, and, you know, at the risk of sounding like a broken record.
And I don't work for an insurer, by the way.
And at the risk of sounding like a broken record, you know, the FCA want advisors to look at overall value, not just price. They reiterated that in the thematic review. The one thing I would challenge about that, I mean, insurers have been saying it's all about quality, but not price. For about 15 years, but they haven't actually built any tools to help advisors assess those things. It needed people outside the insurer space to fund the delivery of those tools. So I'm going to come on to Martin Saxon, then I'm going to bring in Jack Southcote from the Exeter, because it's important for us to hear from insurers. Then I'm going to come to Alan Reynolds. So Martin Saxon, please.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard anyone sort of acknowledge so far that, well, don't you actually need the full, doesn't the person's family actually need the full sum assured under the life policy? If the person claims because they become terminally ill, then, and the phrase being used is put their own financial affairs in order. So if they do that, if they then erode the payout by doing some of that, and then there might be people, a lot of people, especially if they've had a devastating diagnosis like that, might need motivated to spend a significant sum on a dream final holiday or something like that. I mean, are the protection advisors on the call, are they actually adding on bits to their life cover recommendations so that people can spend money when they have a terminal illness? Because it just seems to me that the full sum assured is likely to be needed, and that either and on that basis, if people get a terminal illness, either they shouldn't claim and they should wait to wait for their family to do that when they pass away, or if they do claim, then they should pass the sum on to their family, because the whole idea of taking out the policy was to make sure that the family would be sorted if that person wasn't around anymore.
Okay, fair enough. Fair point there. Let's come on to Jack. Alan Reynolds, see your note that you've lost your voice, so we'll rely on your comments in the chat. And after we've heard from Jack, I'm going to go to Ian Sawyer.
Thanks, Ian. Jack. Hi, everybody. Yeah, just wanted to just bring just a little bit of detail that actually Stephen Pickering has mentioned in the chat, and that is that we are talking about price and quality, and I think it is worth pointing out that there are two Guardian products, and the second one that they brought out last year did revert to a more standard looking TI definition, and I think that is because there is a price that comes with the innovation of having the extra conditions on the diagnosis of TI. I think obviously with life insurance being a relatively homogenized product, those sort of things will come at a cost. And just one thing that I don't think has been mentioned yet that I just wanted to position is with four conditions being added on to TI as a, you know, paying on diagnosis, not necessarily the length of time the customer has left to live. Could we potentially be in a position where features get added and added and added, and then we get into a position that we've been on with critical illness in the past, where it becomes a bit of a race to who can have more features on the definition? Is just something to consider. I mean, we're definitely engaged in the conversation. I think there's been loads of really good points made. We've spoken to Emma before about the changing of the name, and we're engaging in the ABI with the focus group around this, and definitely keen to see this move in the right direction, but it's not quite as cut and dry as it might look.
I'm going to come on to Ian Sawyer. I am going to invite each of you that are coming on and making points now. Could I ask you to be kind of brief and concise? We're halfway through the time allotted for the meeting, and I haven't got past the first topic yet. There are other ones that I think people are going to find equally important, but Mr. Sawyer, if I can come to you, sir.
Yeah, I'll be brief because I agree with you. We spent 30 minutes talking about terminal illness, and for me, when you're looking at the market study, this is not the biggest issue. This is one of many issues, and this should be wrapped up really with replacement products and the fact that when any agent replaces a product, there should be a more detailed analysis of showing the customers what they're losing or gaining from the change in product.
You're not going to be surprised to hear me agree with you on that one. Might even be doing something about that. Mark Belch. Are you there? No. Maybe Mr. Higgs, did you want to come in and make an extra point? Adam?
No, I may just not have taken my hands down.
Okay, fair enough. Stephen Pickering, do you want to come in and add some more?
Hello.
Hello.
I just found it quite interesting looking, like I mentioned in the chat, that I completely agree that Guardian's, you know, better definition makes a huge difference. And I think they should be applauded for that. And particularly with their recent claim stats, seeing how many times they paid out under that definition when the market standard definition wouldn't. It was almost as interesting around that time that Life Essentials has been brought in, which is just kind of going back to that same common denominator. And I just wonder how that will impact sort of things moving forwards, I guess, as their claim stats start coming out. But I think just echoing what other people have been saying, it would be good to see that approach being adopted. But I think like Jack had said, does it become a case of just a numbers game then for the definitions that don't include the timescale? And I can see why they brought out the cheaper one, but to remain competitive. But yeah.
Okay, great. I'm just gonna. Where are we? Yeah, I think I'm gonna one more. Andrew, sorry, I can't see your surname there, but you've made an observation about Race to the Bottom being something the FCA should investigate. I'd agree with you. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, I think it's Andrew Wilkinson, by the way.
Hi, Andrew.
From Middleworth. Hi. I hear it so often from people within the industry on the advisor side about this whole race to the bottom and you know, the unwanted consequences of it. When we had COVID, we had the situation of many, many pipeline cases being declined because the medical evidence hadn't been received in time and they applied the changes retrospectively. But towards the end of COVID, we actually ran a couple of repeat comparisons on some cases. And what we found was that prices for life cover had come down during COVID, which was extraordinary, really, when you think that although some people were at an increased risk of getting COVID, everybody pretty well was at some degree of increased risk. So I think it is about time this is looked at in more detail. Thank
you. Really interesting. And that's probably a good point to move on. I put up a few moments ago some questions we asked on the subject of closed book conference. Policy servicing. There were three issues that we looked at. The first one is, should all insurers have a legal duty to make info on all existing plans available advisors electronically? That, of course, would have happened had the Data Protection and Digital Information Bill have passed through Parliament and received royal assent before Rishi Sunak barred Parliament. It didn't. Unfortunately, it wasn't mentioned in the King's speech, so it looks like we're not going to get that in the current year. But I want to come on to how important advisors think it is to have this information electronically. Jeff, to try and frame that conversation a little bit, two things that really occurred to me. One, I hear the protection community, particularly protection manufacturers, bemoaning constantly that wealth firms don't sell as much protection as they would like them to. Protection providers need to understand that wealth firms now get data feeds for everything on investment products. And if you're not providing all the information in electronically, you're not really working to the way that they want to. We've also had a lot of conversations around annual statements. Well, if we provided all the information electronically, that would be a huge step forward in the ability for advisors to do reviews and annual statements. We also went on and asked if mandating electronic delivery should be required for in-force policies, but also for closed book. There was only a slight difference there. I'm going to come to Jack Southcott. Jack, you've got your hand up.
Sorry, and I didn't mean to. It must have been still up from last time.
Okay, in which case, Mr. Higgs.
Again, I thought I'd put my hand down. I'm going to...
Okay, fair enough.
I'll put it down, yep.
So, Mark B., you said it's difficult enough to get timely and accurate information, let alone electronically. So I'm a bit confused by that. Could you expand?
Yeah, I'm happy to expand. I do a fair bit of work with the closed book companies with long-standing clients, and I frequently get told seriously inaccurate information. Often it can take 8 to 10 weeks and the entire service is appalling. So if these businesses can't operate to a basic level of accuracy and efficiency, what hope do we have of getting anything worthwhile electronically? And on top of that, why should we be asking these companies to invest in this when they quite clearly don't invest in decent training and decent service standards? I think that's my point. And the same does apply to non-closed book companies on the whole as well.
All right. Well, I can't expand on it because it's not for public domain yet, but there is at least one major closed book provider I've been talking to recently, that, and I have yet to see the detail, but they are claiming that they've built a huge amount to open up their back book. Emma, annual statement bingo. Would you like to expand? How long have you and I been talking about that? Emma Thompson, that is.
Yes, sorry for being flippant, but yes, well over 10 years now, I think, Ian. So, you know, we have seen improvements, you know, and hats off to insurers that have improved. And we know that there are some that are still in development to actually release decent annual statements. But come on, this is just a joke. You know, as advisors, you're expected to make sure that customers' policies are still suitable. We're encouraging advisors to undertake reviews. But annual statements need to be delivered to make sure that the customers and advisors can actually do that properly. And we must also remember that not everybody buys through an advisor. So, and even if they did buy through an advisor, that advisor might have retired. So they might now be an orphan client. So, you know, we've got to make sure that customers are in informed position as to what cover they've got. So one, they can claim on it. So we get more claims through, because lots of people don't claim because they forget what they can claim on. And secondly, that they're not likely to cancel because we're reminding them of the value of the cover and also any added value benefits. So yes, you know, I do not want to be here in like 5 years time and we're still having the same conversation. Please, any insurer on the call who's not doing it yet, please.
I think you make a really valid point, and one that I think we should take to the FCA, which is it's very hard for advisors to meet their consumer duty obligations if the insurers don't make it easier to get the information, and particularly accurately. And I do want to call out a situation going back, and by the way, it's more than 10 years. We've been talking about annual statements for at least 15 years.
Yeah, maybe 15, actually, Ian, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. I think it's when we drafted sample, you know, annual statements.
Over 15 years ago, one of the big four banks wanted to actually introduce something on their online banking to show customers how much life insurance they had that they bought through the bank. They went a long way down the line with the project, and they canned it in the end because they could not get a feed from insurers to confirm when the policies were still in force or not. And understandably, they didn't want to be creating regular documentation saying a policy was in force if there were a chance that it had lapsed. So that's something we should look at. I'm going to come back to Mr. Higgs and hope that this time you do have your hand up and it's not a system error.
No, I'm pretty sure I have put my hand down.
Sorry,
I don't know why it's still showing.
No problem.
Sorry.
I'm going to come to Tim B, if I may, who's asked why it's...
Indeed, Ian. Yes, good speech. Yeah, I can't understand how an insurer can produce a policy schedule at the point of sale and not tell the client what the policy is decreasing by. It's a fixed percentage each year. An old firm I used to work for used to issue a policy schedule, tell the client exactly what the sum assured reduced by each year at the outset. So we only had to look at the policy document at any point during the term and we'd know. There's very few insurers have that information on their portal. There are a couple, but the vast majority of insurers getting information on existing policies is a phone call or an email and can take ages. It's just ridiculous, really. So that's that's why it should be on an annual statement. If they don't produce it, particularly with decreasing term assurance, it's so relevant. People need to know what that is.
So if I make a suggestion, and if we potentially put to the FCA that providers not making this information available electronically is making it very difficult for advisors to meet their consumer duty obligations through regularly reviewed plans, am I being reasonable or unreasonable? Anybody care to give a view on that? Okay. Sorry. Somebody, did I see a hand go up there?
Yeah, it's Claudine.
Yeah, hi Claudine, do come
hi.
In.
I think it's very reasonable we should have that. I'll give you an example. I had a client who I had to defer their financial review on moving, doing everything, sorting out their protection, because it took a specific company that will remain unnamed 4 months to register a letter of authority so I could get the information from them over the phone.
Good point. And the reason I'm in Edinburgh today is because I'm at a letter of authority event with Origo from 2:30. Although I'm going to say that not enough emphasis has been put on letters of authority and protection. Generally the comments seem to be reasonable on that point, so we will take that point forward. Replacement business has come up earlier. You can see here overwhelming support from advisors for greater clarity from the regulator on the requirements for replacement business. Ian Sawyer, you brought this up earlier. Would you like to expand on a subject I know that's important to you?
Yeah,